Chapter 12. With the soldiers, and crowding them for space, were the officers' mules and ponies, steers, calves and squealing pigs, while crates full of chickens were piled on top of one another as high as the hurricane deck, so that the roosters and the buglers vied with each other in continual contests. It was like traveling with a floating menagerie. Twice a day the bugle sounded the call for breakfast and dinner, and the soldiers ceased to sprawl, and squatted on the deck around square tin cans filled with super red wine, from which they fed themselves with spoons and into which they dipped their rations of hardtack, after first breaking them on the deck with a blow from a bayonet, or crushing them with a rifle butt. The steward brought what was supposed to be a sample of this soup to the officer seated in the pilot house high above the squaler, and he would pick out a bean from the mess on the end of a fork, and place it to his lips and nod his head gravely, and the grinning steward would carry the dish away. But the soldier seemed to enjoy it very much, and to be content, even cheerful. There are many things to admire about the Spanish Tommy. In the 7 fortified cities which I visited, where there were thousands of him, I never saw one drunk or aggressive, which is much more than you can say of his officers. On the march he is patient, eager and alert. He trudges from 15 to 30 miles a day over the worst roads ever constructed by man, in canvas shoes with rope soles, carrying 150 cartridges, 50 across his stomach and 100 on his back, weighing in all 50 pounds. With these he has his Mauser, his blanket and an extra pair of shoes, and as many tin plates and bottles, and bananas and potatoes and loaves of white bread as he can stow away in his blouse and knapsack. And this under a sun which makes even a walking stick seem a burden. In spite of his officers, and not on account of them, he maintains good discipline, and no matter how tired he may be, or how much he may wish to rest on his plank bed, he will always struggle to his feet when the officers pass, and stand at salute. He gets very little in return for his efforts. One Sunday night, when the band was playing in the plaza, at a heaven-forsaken fever camp called Ciego de Avila, a group of soldiers were sitting near me on the grass enjoying the music. They loitered there a few minutes after the bugle had sounded the retreat to the barracks, and the officer of the day found them. When they stood up, he ordered them to report themselves at the cartel under arrest, and then, losing all control of himself, lashed one little fellow over the head with his colonel's staff, while the boy stood with his eyes shut, and with his lips pressed together, but holding his hand at salute until the officer's stick beat it down. These soldiers are from the villages and towns of Spain. Some of them are not more than 17 years old, and they are not volunteers. They do not care whether Spain owns an island 80 miles from the United States, or loses it, but they go out to it, and have their pay stolen, and are put to building earth forts and stone walls, and die of fever. It seems a poor return for their unconscious patriotism, when a colonel thrashes one of them, as though he were a dog, especially as he knows the soldier may not strike back. The second night out, the ship steward showed us a light lying low in the water, and told us that was Jucaro, and we accepted his statement, and went over the side into an open boat, in which we drifted about until morning, while the colored man who owned the boat, and a little mulatto boy who steered it, quarreled as to where exactly the town of Jucaro might be. They brought us up at last against a dark shadow of a house, built on wooden posts, and apparently floating in the water. This was the town of Jucaro as seen at that hour of the night, and as we left it before sunrise the next morning, I did not know until my return whether I had slept in a stationary ark or on the end of a wharf. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.